Okay, yes, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Rugby Muscle Podcast. Your tarot cards for guiding you through your training, your nutrition, and your performance for rugby. I'm your host, as always, TJ, and I think this one is going to be a bang. I'm pretty excited for it. And if at any point you agree, thumbs up on the YouTube and 5-star ratings on the podcast platforms are always appreciated. Sharing it with your team, or maybe even for this episode, it could be shared with some loved ones, also really does help out the show. Because today we are going to be talking about specific ideas on training to live longer and how scarily close that is to training for rugby. We'll look at why that might be the case and what to do about it. The main framework I will follow for this episode and for my ideas around training for longevity come from Dr. Peter Attia's work. He owns a practice and is considered one of the top experts in this field. He discusses the idea of not just extending life, but also extending aliveness. So with the idea that you're going to be an athlete for life and potentially compete in what he calls the centenarian Olympics, doing things like picking up your great granddaughter from the ground, being able to carry groceries up a couple flights of stairs, things like this where you're not just able to stay alive for longer, but you're actually able to live for longer. And as I go through this pod, I'll touch on his own training goals or the idea behind his training goals. And actually, we'll probably mostly not talk about his idea of the centenarian Olympics because we're just going to apply this to rugby. But we'll also look at the idea of training for longevity and health and how that all applies. And if you want to check out this idea even further and the idea of the centenarian Olympics even further or any more of Dr. Peter Attia's work, I recommend you check out the book Outlive that's been out for about a year now. One of the most, I think it's like, always been in the top 10 ratings on Amazon, so go check that out. Let's get into it. So, the fundamentals of aging. Peter outlines three different ways that we decline as we age. Those are cognitive, physical, and emotional. Obviously, in this episode, we're dealing with the physical, but it is crucial that I state right out of the bat that rugby, with its team atmosphere, camaraderie, social and outdoors aspects, all support emotional health. And the problem-solving, tactical nature and skill of the game also will definitely support cognitive health because you are using your brain as you play. Being a part of a team or rugby club also means that you're part of a community and there are nearly always fantastic support networks that exist through it. And obviously, to give a full view of it, like to on the other end of the spectrum, I do think that there can be some like toxic hyper competitiveness that might feature in some clubs. But as a totality, I think this is also declining in sport as a whole. And of course, if your club is full of dicks, you can just change club. Right. So ticking those areas so far. And yes, I'll touch on other potential downsides of mental health as far as we're looking at concussions a little bit later. Now, as we go through the physical training that Dr. Peter Attia outlines for aging well, we will inevitably be slapped in the face with the parallels that there are between these and the physical training needs that you have for rugby. So let's first look at how we should be approaching training for longevity in general. With all of these components, it's about building as much as you can from an early age, like your teens, all the way up until your 60s, because at some point in your 70s, there is going to be a decline that seems to inevitably kick in. And whilst you can still slow it down by maintaining some level of training as you get older and older and older, the best thing that you can do is to be in really great health in these areas beforehand so that you've got a much bigger reserve to pull from, to draw from, to drop down from, to decline from as you age, right? So it's kind of like building a physical pension. The bigger you build it up as you get into the time that you need it, you've got a lot more wiggle room. You've got a lot more room to play with. That's the overall approach to why you should be considering training for longevity now, no matter how old you are. If you're able to listen to a podcast, it is something that you can still actually actively train for no matter what your age. And then as you get older, these things do become more important, but you you're less likely to experience, or you've got less room to be able to make those improvements, right? So someone in their 20s can build up a huge physical reserve because they've got decades of building, unlike someone that can still make progress in their 50s or maybe even in their 60s, maybe even in their 70s if they're completely untrained, but they've got much smaller reserve to build in that time frame. All right, so there are four main areas that Dr. Peter Attia looks at his training. Firstly, we've got strength training. Obviously, that's going to be number one for longevity. There's a big emphasis on building muscle mass and functional strength. Strength is one of the biggest predictors of mortality, since the stronger you are, the more capable you are. The stronger you are, the more you can move and support yourself in day-to-day life. The muscle mass improves also your metabolic health, which will help reduce diabetes risk and other such issues. Strength training also helps build out bone density, which can help keep away osteoporosis and potential breaks. I've also seen data suggesting a strong link between leg strength and brain health. But actually, I'll get onto the cognitive benefits of physical training a little bit later. Just getting bigger and stronger obviously is a something that you should be concerned with as you get older, but also, obviously, no brainer, you're listening to the Rugby Muscle Podcast, you know you don't need me to spell out how getting bigger and stronger is going to be fantastic for your rugby performance. So we're not even going to go into it. Next, we've got cardiovascular training. We'll divide those up into two ways. Firstly, we've got your aerobic capacity. Training your aerobic system is going to improve the efficiency of the heart, arteries, and blood, which is going to obviously help reduce the risk of heart disease, stroke, and other such complications. It also helps increase lung capacity, allowing oxygen to flow even more freely throughout the body. I should put more emphasis on the reduction of the risk of heart disease, because that is one of the most common things that gets us in our older age, along with cancer, along with diabetes, and dementia. So those are the four things that are eventually going to catch us up. Heart disease the risk is really negated by having a really sound cardiovascular system. We'll look at the others later, potentially ignoring cancer, because there's just so much diversity. It goes beyond the scope of this podcast. So now, looking at aerobic capacity and its benefits for rugby, I've harped on this for a long, long, long time now. Since rugby is played over 80 minutes, most of which is walking, standing still, or slowly jogging, the aerobic system is the most used energy system during a game. So training your aerobic system, training zone 2, getting a stronger aerobic system is going to lead to improved performance with increased recovery time between those high intensity efforts that you will put into in a game during those times when you're jogging, standing still, etc. And it's also going to give you more mental and physical capabilities to be in good positions during those times. Then we'll look at the other side of the coin. So we've got, our low end aerobic performance with, our zone 2. Then we've got the right absolute top end when we're looking at VO2 max or absolute max output. So Dr. Peter Attia recommends training your max output work, doing VO2 max, like absolute, pushing yourself to your heart rate max, again, to increase the strength and efficiency of the heart, increasing stroke volume, VO2 max, and just overall improving the top end of your energy system, which is going to lead to some more downstream effects for your aerobic system, creating a more robust aerobic system, which again is going to help you down the line with these cardiovascular disease risks. Now, we worked this in rugby for the specific benefit of really trying to target those high output movements and then those potential times in the game, rarely where it goes beyond, 10 plus seconds of output. So we work for an absolute balls out effort for 6 to 10 seconds, as hard as you can, to really get that output going. And then we'll also do some work of max output that you can in a given time, a little bit longer, again, improving your VO2 max. But more importantly for rugby, it's getting you ready for those big carries or series of carries, rucks or tackles. We need our energy system to be prepared to produce a lot of energy in a really short period of time for rugby. So it's, the stronger that we can get that, the more robust we can get that, the better. Cardiovascular health is also been linked with increased cognitive function and mood. And again, I'll link back to that a little bit later. And then the final training component for longevity is going to be stability. This is essentially more like a specific version of strength that helps you as you age, because one of the things that you want to avoid is falling. In rugby, I would call the stability work more like movement athletic work. And for, you know, essentially our longevity, yeah, this is preventing us from falling, which in elderly populations can have dire consequences. It's very common to have one fall lead to one hospital visit, maybe a broken hip, particularly if you're not doing your strength work, and then everything sort of cascades and goes downhill from there. It's ridiculously common. So the more that we can avoid damaging falls, the better. So with the elderly population, it's not just improving like balance, it's also about improving your proprioception to react to slips, trips, etc. So maybe you've got to catch a handrail on the way down, or maybe you've just got to plant your foot, maybe you've got to react to any sort of stimulus of you being pushed. Improving your proprioception is going to help in avoiding falling over and having bad consequences of those things happen to you. Training balance is training coordination, is training movement. You need to learn to move laterally on one leg, in wide stances, in rotations. You're treating your body as a unit that can do things, not a machine that just picks things up and puts them down or is trying to look better. Of course, this is a huge part of training as an athlete that's going to help you perform better on the pitch. This isn't a case of like extreme movement or mobility, just enough to have a robust athletic body that can produce quality movement and demonstrate those strength, those aerobic, those speed gains that we have elicited in the gym, and then can show them on the pitch. So to look at the bigger picture of all of this, we'll look at mental health real quick. So every single one of these physical outcomes has shown a strong, significant link with mental health and cognitive function, potentially reducing the risk of things like dementia, as we mentioned already. At the minimum, there's a quality of life benefit that comes with this stuff, right? Of course, in rugby, there are going to be risks with injuries, and of course, concussions that can have a potential later impact in life. A full discussion of the risk reward scenarios at play here is beyond the scope of this podcast. But as someone who actually stopped playing rugby due to too many concussions, it's not a one-way street. The risk mostly, especially as it pertains to CTE and those big problems that come down the line, is those continual sub-concussive traumas that happened in the game like decades ago, right? When you would have every session, every training session, particularly for like the professionals or the high level teams, when they would train every day, every session would be full contact, full go. Every training session, it would be kind of ridiculous, you know, and you'd take a knock to the head, but you just brush it off and you'd keep going. In the modern game, risks are being managed better than ever. And as you go down the league, and maybe even we'll talk about for this podcast, we go into like veterans, old boy tournaments, stuff like that, the risks drop right down as the forces drop down, right? You're not getting the same hits that professional athletes are. We need to address the risks as they pertain to each individual situation, not just say rugby and like equate the high level professional game with the, I don't know, over 40s tournament that's played once a year. You know, like with any sport, there are risks. And if you're attracted to rugby, you're also probably attracted to the physicality of it. So me suggesting touch rugby is somewhat like pedantic, but it is an option. So maybe it's not pedantic. I've suggested it anyway. Take that what you will. But I do want to stress that the physicality is definitely what draws some people to the sport. And like, that's definitely something that we can't just sort of take out for rugby and say, oh, just train for rugby. That's not quite how it works. And this leads to my final point perfectly, right? Motivation and sort of long-term consistency and training application. Telling someone in their 20s or even 30s to train hard so that they don't suffer in their 60s and 70s is not a realistic way to motivate them. But if you look at the idea of this sport that is not only fun to play, that gives you a community, mates, a reason to be outside regularly, potentially boosting your mental health, a physical challenge, and you're seeing that physical challenge become more and more easier and more fun, the better shape that you're in, now you've got something to train for. Now you've got a purpose. For me personally, since I retired, it took me a while to really enjoy my training. It wasn't until I found BJJ that I did so, because now that I have that, I have a purpose. I have some other challenges that like come inside of my running so that I can work on my aerobic system, because BJJ doesn't really address that. And so now I really do have a purpose for all of my lifting, for all of my training. And then one final point that I do want to touch on here, where BJJ definitely shares with rugby and then some other sports, is the idea of like combative play. I think this is somewhat animalistic, and I'm sure in some way like natural, at least to many of us. If you look at like cats and dogs in a park, you look at kids, you look at the entire animal kingdom, there is some primal itch that seems to get scratched when you're confronting another human. And I think in a controlled manner, emotionally, this is a fantastic release. Mentally, it's also like ultimate presence, because you're not thinking about your taxes or other life issues when you're in this situation. So I do think it is absolutely a good thing. All right, so to bring this all together, there is clearly a parallel here. It's also a good argument as to why rugby is probably the most physically challenging sport that you have, because having gaps in your ability to perform just cannot happen in rugby, or it holds you back in rugby, unlike in other sports. You can get weak runners, right? You can get unfit gymnasts. You can get uncoordinated powerlifters or strongman. You can get fast twitch. You can get slow twitch dominant athletes. But in rugby, you're really challenged at both ends across the full entire spectrum, and being proficient across the board of everything that it means to be an athlete is what is going to assist you in your rugby performance and in your longevity. And if you plan it right, you'll have no short of supply of motivation in the long run as you age to continue to train these things. Now, planning for this is where it can get tricky, particularly with a limited time, most information coming from specialists, and the fact that they don't necessarily support each other in the training environment. That is where, of course, I can help. So if you're interested in programming or coaching, I'll put the links in the description. Just click them, sign up, apply, and you'll be the best thing that you did, not just for your rugby performance, but potentially for your longevity too. I'll leave you with this. You and every single person listening to this is an athlete. It doesn't matter your age. It doesn't matter your ability. You have the power to improve in many, if not all of these areas. And in doing so, you're not just preparing for rugby, but for life. With limited time, you should not really look for excuses. That doesn't help. But instead, you should look for a seasonal approach, right? So instead of going full go at all of them or saying, I can't do any of these, there's no point. You should balance strong focuses in some areas or at some times with minimalistic focuses in other areas at other times. And as you continue to rotate through those seasons and rotate those areas and train and improve, you'll build up those reserves that you'll thank yourself for later, and you'll become an awesome athlete that enjoys themselves along the way. I hope that helps. If you have any questions, feel free to ask below in the YouTube or tap the three dots on Spotify. If you haven't already, give it a thumbs up. 5-star ratings, once again, are always appreciated, and thank you for watching or listening. See you in the next one.